This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. I'm Khoo Sichuan, joined by Sharitz Abdullah. Today is the fifth anniversary since the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines MH370. The plane vanished on March 8, 2014. 239 people on board, Sharitz, were the victims. Remembrance events took place earlier this week. Transport Minister Anthony Look notably said the government was more than willing to restart the search for the missing plane. Two previous wide-scale sweeps of the Indian Ocean have failed to find any trace of the missing plane. But nonetheless, in January, from about 2 years ago, a search from the Australian Transport Safety Bureau was called off after 2 years.
So last year, an American firm, Ocean Infinity, spent several months searching a different patch of seabed. And on a no-find, no-fee basis, but failed to find traces of the plane. Look said that if Ocean Infinity or any other organisation could make a convincing case for deploying sophisticated new underwater drones, Malaysia would begin a third search. So MH370 was a flight to Beijing.
Closure still very much on the cards for many of the victims' families. Now, Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad met with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte in Manila yesterday. Our Prime Minister was given a state welcome at the Malacanang Palace yesterday, the first such reception given to a foreign head of government by the Philippines under Duterte's administration.
So the two leaders, they had a joint press conference where they expressed a commitment to enhance cooperation in trade, investment and security. The warm tone of the visit is notable given that there are irritants in the Malaysia-Philippine relationship, such as persistent claims by group in the Philippines over Sabah and the security threats in the southern Philippines, which also affect our shores. Now, Malaysian total trade with Philippines in 2018, it grew 9%, amounting to nearly $7 billion from the $6 billion in 2017. Malaysia is fourth largest trading partner among ASEAN countries and 15th largest trading partner in the world.
Sharitz, good news. Anwar Ibrahim is a millionaire. He's apparently declared assets worth nearly 11 million ringgit. Now, he's apparently got a house in Bukit Segambut valued at 9.5 million ringgit. Earlier purchased, I think 14 years ago, for 4.5 million ringgit. So he's done quite well from a property investment perspective.
Yes, previously before that, I think he had a house in Bukit Damansara and a piece land in Pematang Habib as well.
How did you know that?
Well, there was that 1998... Reformasi that was, it was centered in Bukit Damansara, if you remember.
Ew.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So that was back in the day. So a piece of land in, he also has a piece of land in Habib, Mukim Penur in Kuantan, which was purchased for about 7,000 ringgit in 1974. And now... 420,000 ringgit.
So, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
well,
like,
I guess
60x, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And also, assets include investment and savings amounting to 828,000.
Right. Well, according to the MACC, 122 out of 129 government MPs have declared their assets. So I'd be willing to take a peek at what those assets are. Now, moving on to a story that's been making rounds in the Twitterverse, the Centre for Governance and Political Studies, CENTGPS, a behavioural and social science research firm, yesterday unveiled a very important report, Sharitz, that looks into racial prejudices when it comes to recruitment in the private sector, Now, this study seeks to expand on existing research, most notably a study conducted by Dr. Mohamad Abdul Khalid and Lee Hock Wan, Dr. Lee Hock Wan, in 2016. That was titled at that time, Degrees of Discrimination, Race and Graduate Hiring in Malaysia. Now, the methodology of the story, what's the lowdown there?
So the CENTGPS sent out roughly about 3,800 job applications to over 500 jobs. And for every job vacancy, they sent out 7 candidates. It looks like there are about 3 Malay, both male and female candidates in the list. There are 2 Indian candidates. Both male and female, as well as Chinese and Malay. 2 Chinese male and female. Now, they all had familiar but not identical resumes. And same degree, same CGPA, graduated from a local private university, had a 3 month internship, and they, everything is equal in the paper. But notably, the passport picture to the resumes were taken from the same person. Now, the candidate all had almost similar physical features, but were applied makeup to appear, as the ethnicity in the resume.
So basically, they had the same qualifications. They had the same everything else. Even they were in fact the same person, but just had different makeup and different hairstyles, right? And different genders made up with makeup. So he had a Malay boy, a Malay girl, a Chinese boy, Chinese girl, Indian boy, Indian girl, right? So what did the findings find? The findings found that the male and female Chinese candidates obtained more job callbacks than their Malay and Indian peers combined. Now, the order out of over 500 jobs, Nicola, the Chinese girl, received 240 callbacks. Gabriel Liu, the Chinese boy, received 179. Sadiq had 42, while Thivaka had a dismal callback of 20. Now, this study, of course, generated a lot of discussion on social media. So we have Zaidul Baharuddin, the researcher at Center GPS, to talk about the study. Zaidul, fascinating results. Thank you for joining us. Now, talk about the methodology. What was the ideology behind the study?
So, based on the report that you mentioned before, the one that was done before us, we wanted to know how far does this go. So, we decided to put a human factor to it. The previous study was actually randomized resumes sent out to randomized jobs across several sectors. So we decided to be a bit more specific because when calling candidates for interviews is a human factor, is a human decision, so we decided to put a human factor in. That's why the idea of putting the seven resumes come out, coming from two same people. So what we did was we get two of our researchers, we make them up, and we came up with seven candidates. That way we put, and then all seven will be competing for the same job. So we wanted to see effects like where we did not know before this, that though the previous study confirmed that there's a discrimination towards non-Chinese candidates, and it's mostly about Malay versus Chinese again and again, we wanted to know how would other minorities or other ethnicity find this. So we decided to put an Indian candidate. We also wanted to see if there's a difference between having the same person with the same ethnicity, one with a tudung, the other one without a tudung, and see how it is. So, and also we wanted to put some Mandarin factor to it. And so as you see, the result is what we saw.
Also, what were you hoping to achieve or show in this study?
Well, I wasn't hoping much because the narrative was already set way before we did the study. But we did find out something, some interesting facts. For instance, yes, there's always been this narrative that the Malays were discriminated in the private sector. But what we found out that it's not exclusive just to the Malays. The Indians are actually were much worse off, as you see, as the mentioned, you see just now. Thivaka was actually the Indian male candidate is the worst discriminated in the private sector. Second of all, we also found out that wearing a hijab actually affects your chances in securing a job interview. So that's the other one. Although we were asked during a Q&A session with the media yesterday, what is the idea behind this? Do we want the government to do something? Do we want a law or ratification of something? What we're saying that actually we just want to raise awareness that number one is not just unique towards one ethnicity only. It's not always just Malay versus Chinese. There are other minorities who that we need to look into. And second of all, we don't believe that a government mandated law, mandated rule should be applied to the private sector. Rather, we hope that with this sort of study, it will raise awareness towards the private sector and that if they continue these practices, they would actually lose out on getting very good talents on candidates outside of certain ethnicity.
So, very, very quickly, because we're nearly out of time, but I guess the perils with this kind of study is the exclusion or non-inclusion of the depth of the variability of factors behind such surveys. For example, the type of businesses that they're involved in or the companies applied for and a lot of background factors from a sociological and psychoanalytical perspective. Did your study take into account those factors?
Well, that's a very big question. I need a bit more specific.
Well, I guess that is why I think the producers will be in touch with you to get your good self onto the Breakfast Grill. And I think that is your study prompts much, much deeper and more concentrated discussion. So for now, thank you for your thoughts and insights. We'll be on air in a more comprehensive fashion in a few, well, sooner, hopefully, rather than later. So stay tuned to that discussion. We were talking with Zaidul Baharuddin, researcher at Center GPS, on this very important study. And stay tuned because we'll be coming back with some more news and analysis after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.